Welcome to a TMCNet podcast. My name is Rich Tarani. I am the group editor-in-chief of TMCNet, and today I have the pleasure of having a podcast interview with Chris Lyman, who's the CEO slash janitor of Finality. Now, I've never introduced anyone as that title, CEO janitor, and so I figured when you start off with something so interesting in terms of an interview, you definitely have to ask your interviewee a question or two about that title. Chris, please share with us a little bit about that title of yours.
You know, that's a title that I've had in my last two startups. Each of them have been over 100 employees, so it's not as if we didn't also have a janitor. But I guess I just realized that people seem to think that the bigger your company gets, sort of the more powerful you get, and the more everybody serves you. And what I've actually realized is that as as a company grows, you start to serve the company more, and your role shifts from your role really shifts into solving really hard problems or cleaning up messes. And so there's a lot of days where I come in with the title of CEO, and what I'm really doing is cleaning messes up in the company. And those messes go all the way from, you know, architecture messes to personnel messes to, you know what, no one flushes the toilet in the bathroom, and then no one else is going to do it, I'm going to do it. And so, you know, I do feel like a janitor, and I remind myself that no job is too small and no mess is too dirty for me to clean up, and it keeps me humble.
And what does that attitude do for you and your corporate culture? How does that help or assist?
You know, it lets everybody know with every email I send that says CEO and janitor that I have an open door and that I'm not afraid of messes and I'll get my hands dirty. Maybe a better title would be janitorial supervisor, because I don't necessarily clean all the messes up with my own hands, but I'm not afraid to look at a mess and clean it up and talk about it. And like I say, it keeps me humble. We have every company's got a tagline, right? And Finality's is communicate openly. And that's a double entendre. Of course, we're an open source-based communication company, but we also try to be really honest and direct and have open door policies with each other.
That's great. So tell me, why did you start Finality, or what made you decide to start Finality?
You know, it's one of those things where you never know why you're starting a company at the time, but you look back, you know, with hindsight, and you're able to tell an interesting story about how you got there, because it's very clear to me now. My last company was a web hosting company. It was one of the country's top, I think it was the seventh largest web hosting company in the U.S. And I sold it, and that's a data company, right, with servers. I had about 800 servers in an 8,000-square-foot facility, and I sold that to a publicly held telephone company. And so the mixture of my data background and of the telephone company sort of segued me into IP telephony. And why I ended up choosing Finality, whose focus is providing affordable, easy-to-use PBXs for small businesses, why I ended up focusing on small businesses, see, it's almost like I just broke into a sales pitch. You see my salesman touch there? I got to almost catch myself of that. You know, when you're running a company, you're always a salesman, right? But why we chose small businesses, Rich, was because that's always been my focus. When I had a hosting company, I was selling $20, $50 a month hosting. I wasn't, you know, Exodus selling $5,000 a month hosting. So my whole career, from my very first startup, which I was a computer consultant servicing, you know, small businesses, has been focused on providing small businesses technology solutions. And that's what Finality is about, affordable software PBXs for the small business market.
So we know what your company does. In terms of customer pains, what would you say the pains are that you eliminate for your customers?
You know, my marketing staff and my VCs hate when I talk so honestly, and they want me to talk about feature, but I'm just going to, you know, tell you straight. There's a price problem with phone systems, and this price problem most importantly impacts smaller businesses. The leaders out there, Avaya, Nortel, Cisco, these guys are, I'm trying not to use the word, but pillaging small businesses in terms of cost. And small businesses get held allegiant to $40,000 and $50,000 and $20,000 price tags for basic phone systems, and it's a ripoff. And so we're in there solving the price algorithm. Now, of course, to do that, We also have to solve the ease of use algorithm, because phone systems are so incredibly hard to install and maintain that what ends up happening is Avaya and Cisco end up having these guys go to school and learn how to maintain these systems, and then they show up on site and they charge small businesses $5,000 to put a friggin' phone system in, and then $150 an hour to come out and do a move out and change. And so to change the price continuum, sure, we have to make this, the thing cheaper overall, but we have to make the maintenance cost go down, and that's an ease-of-use problem. So we're both attacking price and ease-of-use at the same time, and ask TiVo, that ain't easy to do.
Could you tell me a little bit about your newest product, TrixBox Pro, and how it fits in with your product line?
Sure. Boy, that's... Hold on, let me shake off the recent memory of 14-hour days for 6 months. We just launched it a week ago. TrixBox Pro is a really cool project. Let me tell you how we've been doing life so here at Finale, so why TrixBox Pro is different. We've been selling a product called PB Extra, which has been an affordable, easy-to-use PBX that's really sold as an appliance, so that the software and the hardware are sold as one. You get UPS knocks on your door one morning, says, what can Brown do for you? You open the door, and they drop off, boxes. One box has our server in it with our software, our PBX software, and the other one has a bunch of phones, and it's all pre-configured. That's PB Extra. It's been a great direct product. It has not been well received by the DataVar community. The DataVars have woken up. The education cycle in telephony is over, and they know that they can now monetize IP telephony. And they're like, yo, Finality, we're smart enough to build servers. We're smart enough to buy IP phones from VoIP Supply and configure them ourselves. Give us the software. Let us monetize the hardware. Let us have hardware on the rack so that we can, when a customer's phone goes down, we don't have to order it from you. We can just rush in there and drop it off. So what we had to do with TrixBox Pro, Rich, was we had to abstract the hardware from the software, or better said, abstract the software from the hardware. So think of PB Extra like Macintosh. It works great because the software has always been wedded to the hardware. What we had to do was take a Microsoft Windows approach, and I don't mean by stability. I mean Microsoft had to abstract software from hardware so that it could run on anybody's hardware. And that's exponentially hard to do. It's very unsexy work, but it has to be done to open yourself up to all different types of SIP phones, all different types of servers, and all different types of interface cards. So TrixBox Pro is a software-only PBX. It's got a couple of really cool advantages over PBX and really the whole industry. We made a base version for offices under 20 users, and we made it free. Call me .com crazy, but we're making the gamble that if we get in hundreds of thousands of businesses for free, as they grow up and become bigger businesses, they'll buy the paid versions of TrixBox Pro. And I think it's working. We launched about a week ago, and we have about 2,000 downloads a day of this software.
Wow, those are pretty healthy numbers. So
yeah, and that's a PBX, Rich. There might be 10 users on the end of that. So that might be 20,000 users per day.
It's pretty staggering numbers. In terms of your recent launch, TrixNet, can you give us a little bit of an update on what that is and how it's doing?
TrixNet is so cool. Okay. Let me tell your users what TrixNet is so they understand it. TrixNet is a free calling service for businesses worldwide where they can call each other for free using their existing phone numbers. And most people are like, how can my AT&T business call your France Telecom business for free? Okay, basically what we've done is we've created a directory service where when you download and install TrixBox Pro, even the free edition, so free TrixBox Pro, when you download and install that, and you're getting telecom services from, Verizon, okay? And I download it and install it on the other side of the country, and I'm getting telecom services from AT&T. Basically, since we're both members of TrixNet as a function of using TrixBox Pro, when we call each other's numbers and we don't even know each other, any of my employees call any of your employees, TrixBox Pro does a quick check with TrixNet and says, hey, is this phone number in TrixNet? And if it is, it makes that call free point-to-point, bypassing both of our carriers, yet still using both of our carriers' phone numbers. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so it's kind of like the way Enum might work.
It's the way Enum might work, but it's front-ended by regular phone numbers. So Enum typically tends to work with really funky SIP URIs, like kind of like long email addresses, kind of these hybrid, unrememberable items. And what we wanted to do was make TrixNet not change user behavior. So I'm on an IP or an analog or a soft phone, and I want to dial your number just the way I always have, and that call needs to be free.
Well, thanks for explaining a complicated concept in a simple way. With that, I've got a complicated question, which I'm hoping you can simplify. What is patent-pending hybrid-hosted technology?
Oh, boy. Okay. The world is changing right now. The VoIP world the telephony world is changing, and it's in a state of flux between premise hardware, i.e., my $40,000 Avaya switch, and hosted, i.e., COVAD, where my telephony services are all hosted and over the network, and all I have is a phone on premise. We're also in a state of flux between VoIP services and the service that the birds sit across, you know, sit on and, you know, bomb your new car with. You know, they call that the PSTN network. So the whole world is changing right now, but when the world is changing, it's in a state of flux. And this is what all the dot-comers didn't realize in the late 90s. They saw that the software, this is a digression, Rich, but they saw that the software world was changing to an ASP model where software would be a service. So they all raised a gaggle of cash, and they went out and they started their software as a service businesses, and most of them went bankrupt. They did it too early. They didn't recognize that it's a hybrid world, and things change slowly. A friend of mine recently told me that 35% of answering machines still use tape cassettes. Okay? That tells you how slowly the world changes. And tech heads like you and I, we change quickly, but the world moves slowly. So as that world slowly transitions to VoIP, but still continues to use the things the birds sit on, and as that world slowly transitions to software being as a service on the network versus software something that sits at your customer premise, you know, inside your office, there is a need for a hybrid approach. And that's what hybrid hosted is. So how do we use our hybrid hosted technology? Finality does something very unique. We sell to the customer a hardware-based PBX that they install on their premise. But much of the intelligence, much of the software runs at our data center up in the cloud, hence the hosted, so the hybrid hosted piece of it. What this does is twofold. It lets the customer use the existing telephone network. So if the internet blows up or they're having problems, their phone system still runs as expected. But it lets them manage this thing from anywhere in the world. So admins can change PBXs, add an extension, change their call menu, put the thing in a night mode. Remember that, oh my goodness, it's July 4th and I forgot to make a change to the system to say we're not in for the day. Users can be on the road and open up a web browser and set call forwarding and listen to their call logs or click to call people back. Sorry, not listen to their call logs, but listen to their voicemail. You get this kind of like anywhere management approach because our data center is always available on the public internet. Yet your phone system is in a private NATed address space inside of your firewall. Okay? Also, we're able to monitor this thing. We're able to tell you when it's down because we have a constant connection to it. And then finally, we're able to do software patches. The great thing about like a Salesforce.com is, right, when they come out with a new version, you wake up in the morning and you have it. You don't have to install anything. You don't have to have IT staff do any work. That's the magic of software as a service. And so that's the way our software works. In the cloud, we're able to patch it, either fix bugs, do security patches, or introduce new features overnight to the whole customer base.
Now, what about the concept of redundancy? Is there some redundancy built in because of this ASP model that you have?
Yeah, we have what we call auto change control. So every time a customer makes a change to their configuration, like let's say they get a new employee and they add an extension, that is immediately backed up at our data center. So if lightning strikes their PBX or theft or, I don't know, their hard drive blows up, they should be using RAID. They should have two hard drives, but let's say they didn't. They just have one hard drive. We're able to immediately restore that. And in fact, with TrixBox Pro, the customer can just automatically restore their configuration. So you do get a little change control.
Okay, fantastic. So in terms of the open source market, obviously open source is what your products are based on. How do you feel that the open source world has changed the telecom market?
So open source questions for me are always a little scary, Rich, because open source zealots are usually listening and ready to sort of flame me on my blog if I say anything wrong, and I always do. I always say the same thing about open source. I'm not a big believer that open source innovates. I'm a big believer that open source replicates and integrates, which I guess creates a little innovation on its own. But let me explain. Open source typically replicates a closed source software model and does it for free or for very cheap. Okay, so you can look at most open source projects, MySQL replicating closed source databases, Asterisk replicating, Cisco and Avaya's closed source software. But what happens in this process of replicating is because of the nature of knowledge sharing of open source is that they use standards for replicating. And what happens with those standards is that enforces integration. So as they're creating this project and they're using standard protocols like SIP, naturally different other open source or even closed source projects using those standards start to snap into place, and you start to get unified communications on the back end. So open source, in the process of replicating, creates integration, which I guess a byproduct of that makes information flow seamlessly through different software applications, which does start to create some innovation. So maybe I'm double talking a little bit, but the short answer to your question is what open source does is changes cost. Okay, open source gets you a similar solution for less. But as a byproduct of doing it in an open source way, it creates integration. So an IT director who puts an open source product in will naturally have it federate with other software products he's using and create both compounded savings and compounded knowledge sharing. And I think, you know, anytime you increase knowledge sharing and decrease cost, you've done a good thing for the world.
That's great. So if you look out to the next 5 years, what do you think will happen in terms of communications evolution?
Oh, boy. Visionary question. You know, the phone companies are scrambling to lay fiber. And here in Los Angeles, I can already get fiber from Verizon. And this fiber means really fat pipes to homes and to businesses. And I think as the communication companies complete laying this fiber, you're going to have, you know, factors of 10 to 100 times more bandwidth going to homes and businesses. And when you have that, huge amounts of data can flow very, very, very quickly between locations. For instance, forget about voice. Voice is going to be a snap, but video and IPTV and kind of collaboration tools are going to start to become the norm. And so people are going to be much more connected. And they're not going to need to pay atrocious rates to do that, and they're not going to need huge pieces of hardware at their business or home to do it. So, for example, you know, I really feel like the new conference room is going to be done over the web, collaboration. You're already seeing this with, like, you know, GoToMeeting and WebEx. For example, I think big companies like Microsoft are going to have to shift their focus from kind of, you know, servers that you install software with on-premise to more of a thin client, or the network being a service approach, the network being the software, kind of like Google's approach. I think Google... Okay, I know I'm sort of jumping all over the place, but Google is going to really be able to offer meaningful applications in even more than they do today that connect businesses and people without anything, without any hardware on site. And companies that don't adapt, if Microsoft doesn't adapt, and they usually do, they're going to suffer market share. If PBX companies like Avaya and Cisco don't fundamentally start to recognize that the world is going hosted or hybrid hosted, I think they're going to suffer.
Interesting. Okay, so in terms of worries, business worries, are there any that keep you up at night?
Oh, boy. In this space, what doesn't keep me up? What keeps me up at night? You know, bigger companies like Cisco getting smart too quickly. Luckily, Cisco is a bit hamstrung because even though they have Linksys, they can't offer it for the same price we do, or they kind of ruin their enterprise market. You know, Microsoft coming into the space is always worrisome. I survived the hosting space where Microsoft came in with a big desire to kill Apache with their IIS server, and we were real scared. We were a Unix-based company. So, you know, Microsoft coming in with OCS and even Response Point keeps me up. You know, one of the things that keeps me up at night is the fact that because people see that Asterisk is free, even though Asterisk is a very small application, it's only 200,000 lines of code, versus Finality's written 1.3 million lines on top of it. People see that it's free, and they get confused thinking it's a complete solution. And so basically, you have lots and lots of people rushing in to compete with Finality, sort of stapling, three guys in a garage stapling a user interface on Asterisk and thinking they've got a Finality on their hands. And that can be confusing to the market, where they can't tell the difference until they've tried their solution. So the barrier to entry is extremely low in open source, which is another great thing about it. And so I guess I've always got my eye, Rich, like, I drive motorcycles, and I've always, you know, I race both motorcycles, and I'm starting to learn how to drive bikes. So in car racing, it's easy. You always just look ahead to the corner, right? You know what the car is going to do. But in motorcycle racing, you have to do this thing that they call scanning, which is you have to look ahead to the corner to make sure you enter and exit the corner at the apex. But you have to look at your front tire, because if you hit a rock, you're going to die. So you're, like, scanning, and, you know, you get kind of paranoid scanning the road all the time. In this space, because of the nature of open source, I'm always scanning. I'm looking ahead at I'm looking at the Goliaths, if you will, the Microsofts and Avaya's and Cisco's, and I'm looking at the Davids, looking at the guys to my left and right who could, you know, jump up and eat my lunch.
Well, that's great. Well, that's a lot of worries. You seem to look well-rested for someone who's got so much on his mind. That's great. You do a good job with that, with sleeping anyway.
What photo are you looking at?
Maybe it's
bags under my eyes.
Maybe the sleep that you're getting is related to all the extreme sports you're into. You're one of the few people in the industry I know who actually is not only involved in tech but in extreme sports. So, what was your latest event in extreme event? I should ask.
The latest extreme thing I did was a couple of months ago. I went down to Mexico and I participated in a mock Baja 500. I'm not yet skilled enough or have the appetite to put enough money into it to do the real one, but I'm learning on sort of dune buggies. They have 24 inches of travel in the front suspension, so you can literally hit boulders at 50 miles an hour and go flying up into the air, and to the extent that you hit it right, you'll land on your feet and keep, you know, in your tires and keep driving.
It sounds kind of like a Cadillac I used to have in high school, actually. A lot of travel in the front. Same kind of thing.
Suspension travel, yeah. And you know, I'm not going to get into motorcycle racing because I know that's a short pact with death, but I'm learning how to drive motorcycles on tracks, and I'll eventually, probably by the end of this year, be having my knee down pretty solid to, you know, just learn what it's like to corner really fast in a motorcycle. But the racing that I do, which I actually haven't done in 2 years, is auto racing. I own a race team. I race in the U.S. and Canada. And I've taken 2 years off because, well, finality. It's been taking all my time, but I just bought a Hans device, which is that device that holds a driver's neck rigid and prevents it from breaking. It's quite frankly what would have saved Dale Earnhardt's life if he had been wearing it. And I just bought that, so I'm going to get back into racing automobiles this season.
Oh, that's great. Well, good luck. Good luck with that. Enjoy. The final question I've got for you today is IPS was coming up in about a month, and I'm wondering what the industry can expect to see at your booth.
We got really neat things at our booth, and we're doing more than a booth there. We're also doing a Trix Box and Asterisk training seminar, a whole bunch of training seminars to get people educated in this market and start making money. But at our booth specifically, we're going to be announcing our Trix Box Pro reseller program. So we really have now two reseller programs, right? We have our PB Extra for folks who don't want to get into building their own servers and configuring phones. They just want to, like, fire and forget. They want to have us ship to the customer pre-configured. That's PB Extra, but we're going to be announcing our Trix Box Pro reseller program, which is aimed at data resellers who, you know, want to make more margin and invest more time learning it. So we'll kind of have a dual reseller program announcement. But we're also renting a bunch of space from TMC and IT Expo, and we're doing our FTalk training seminars for Trix Box and Asterisk folks who want to get savvy and make a bunch of money. And FTalk stands for, here's a big acronym, Finality Trix Box Open Communication Certification, FTOCC. And what this does, this training course, actually three courses, there's the administration course, and then there's the technician course, and then there's the engineer course. The administration course teaches you moves, adds, and changes across PB Extra, Trix Box CE, which is our 100% free open source, and then Trix Box Pro. It teaches you basically how to install and administer the system. Then we have our FTalk technician course. This is under the hood. This teaches you how to get in, debug Asterisk, debug Linux, figure out what's wrong with your SIP phone. This is agnostic to what you're using. You could be using TrixBox, PB Extra, Digium's Asterisk, whatever. This is taught by our hardcore guys and teaches you how to fix problems on the WAN, LAN, and the server. Then we have our engineering course that we're teaching for the first time ever at IT Expo, and that teaches programming, CTI. How do I make my IP PBX integrate with CRM, integrate with ticketing systems, stand on its head, bark, deliver the newspaper, RSS feeds, database dips, all the stuff you need to really do expensive custom jobs and make a living doing that.
And that's where the tremendous value is in these open systems as I see it. As open communications actually interoperates more efficiently with databases and XML and RSS and all the other Web 2.0 type communications mediums, I think we really are in great shape as an industry in that we will be able to add a lot of value for enterprises that are making more productive and efficient. And it seems like that's the goal, right?
Oh, it's incredible. What used to cost $1 million, you can do for $5,000-$10,000. I'll give you an example. I'm sitting right now looking at HUD. And HUD is our application that we made. It's like presence management. And it shows me kind of every employee on the phone, and so I can click and call them, and it's like a mouse-driven thing. But let me tell you about something that we did in 1 or 2 days of coding that we're going to be teaching this engineering course. So when a call comes into our support system, okay, the customer is asked to enter their server number and what server they're using. They enter that using DTMF tones. This executes a program that looks into our ticketing system, which is also open source, it's RT, and reads them back ticket numbers that they have open with us. And then using their phone, they select which ticket they want to do. Okay, it gets better. So they say, okay, I want ticket number 2 about why won't my firewall work, blah, blah, blah. So they select ticket number 2 by keep pressing 2. Okay, what that then does is that calls into our sales queue using our queuing software, our support queue using our queuing software, and it finds an agent. As soon as that agent picks up the phone, it uses HUD to screen pop the exact ticket number that the customer queried on the phone. So the agent sees it the moment that they picked up the phone, but it gets better. So then inside of HUD, it overwrites the caller ID name with the ticket number. So the manager of the support agents can see exactly what ticket everybody on their staff is working on. And then when the person hangs up the phone, let's say I talked to you for an hour helping you with your problem and I hang up the phone, it then tags that ticket with how many minutes the person worked on the ticket so that we can run profitability reports and understand what's driving costs by symptom inside of our support group. And we wrote that program in 1 to 2 days.
Wow.
And that's the kind of thing we're going to be teaching in our engineering course.
That's great. I'm looking forward to sitting in on that course. And with that, Chris, I really appreciate your time. This is I'm interviewing Chris Lyman, who is the CEO of Finality, and my name is Rich Tarani, and this is a podcast for TMCNet. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening to the podcast, and stay tuned to TMCNet and my blog, Tarani.com, for more information on communications and technology. Thank you.